All right, good evening, everybody. I'd like to call a special meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education to order. Okay. Heather, want to read the notice?
In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 21, Laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through the annual public notice on November 26th, 2012, faxing to 5 newspapers designated by the board, Hunterdon County Democrat, Hunterdon Review, Star Ledger, Courier News, and the Easton Express, posting on the district website, the main bulletin board in the administration office, and in each Clinton Township school, and filing with the clerk of Clinton Township.
Thank you. Want to call the roll call, please?
Mr. Frieda?
Present.
Mrs. Grant?
Here.
Mr. Malloy? Mrs. McLaughlin?
Here.
Mr. McTiernan? Mr. Sturgis?
Here.
Mrs. Sullivan?
Here.
Mr. Dinkoff? And Mrs. Krestick?
Here. Okay, ready for the Pledge of Allegiance? Everyone please stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, the next item is the President's comments and report. Mr. Dinkoff is not here tonight, and I do not have a report for him in his stead. So the next item on the agenda is public comments on agenda items only. I'll invite any member of the public to come up and speak on any item that's on the agenda, please. Okay. No takers? Now I'd like to have the first recognition of the public. They're invited to come, and any member of the public is welcome to come and speak on any item. Yes, please. Yes. Please state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Lana Brennan, 21 Fawn Drive, Lebanon. I have a quick question. Since I wasn't able to make the last meeting and I didn't get a chance to listen, and I kind of glanced at it, I was wondering what the school choice, like, was it just a presentation, or was there any talk about what the plans are next, or what's the next step?
Yes, please. Dr. Okay. Clark?
There was a presentation, but the board, I asked the board for direction on the next steps, and the board gave me direction to, we are at 81 students as of right now. We had budgeted for 102. We're being paid by the state for 102 because there's fluctuation throughout the school year.
Okay.
And we are going to move that number to 110. So there will be, we lost 7 students, so we're at 81 students. We'll move it to 110. We're leaving some spots for people who move in and out. We started our open houses today.
Oh, and another question on that. If kids join for the school choice, it's only at the beginning of the year. It's not like in the middle of the year or anything like that?
Right, unless they're students who are already with us and have moved.
Okay. So that's, you're going to open it to 110 for the 2013-14 year?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'd like to invite any other member of the public that would be interested in addressing the board. All right, seeing none, we'll go on to our next item on the agenda, and that will be a report by the school business administrator on the budget.
The superintendent.
And the superintendent, please.
Okay.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. Not too many people in our audience tonight, but I appreciate those of you who did come out. It's a busy time of year. Tonight, we're really going to be talking about not the school budget itself. We have not put that together yet. However, this is a presentation about how Clinton Township is going to be putting their school budget together this year. It's a little different from previous years. We are doing a zero-based budget. So let me share with you. Didn't work. Here we go. All right, so just a reminder that we are really a K-8 school formally, but we have a pre-K program. So we are pre-K through 8. We do not include North, which is the high school in the area. It is a regional high school and is a district unto itself. So we have Spruce Run, which is a pre-K 1 school, Patrick McGarren, Round Valley, Clinton Township Middle School. You can see the years that the schools were built, so it gives you an idea in terms of age and what kinds of facilities we have. And we have, as of the October 15th numbers, we have 1,615 students. So what is a school budget? Clearly, we're trying to balance needs and priorities with fiscal responsibility. If you notice, the fiscal school year is a little different than some you might be aware of. For schools, it goes from July 1st to June 30th. The budget is developed in December through February of the year before we're living with the budget. Now, I'm going to introduce Heather Spitzer, who is going to talk you through how the whole budget process is going to work this year, and information about our community, where money comes from, where it goes. And this will be on the website tomorrow, so you can always reference it there. Mrs. Spitzer?
Thank you, Dr. Clark. One of the first things I'd like to talk about this evening is where your property taxes in whole are distributed among the ratables in Clinton Township. As you can see based on this chart, 47% of your taxes go specifically to Clinton Township School, which would be the pre-K through 8 program. 27% of your ratables will go to North Hunterdon High School. 10% is for municipal tax. 12% is to the county. And as you can see off to the side, we have approximately 1% for the County Open Space Act, the library tax of 1% and the Clinton Township Open Space Tax. Of that percentage, the 47%, 83.65% of that is supported by local taxes. 9.3% comes from state aid, 2.44% comes from surplus. We do get some money from federal aid that is specifically to support our grants. Federal aid, so that's 2.13%. Tuition is money that's paid to the district. Most of it comes from tuition we receive from Lebanon Borough for our 7th and 8th grade students, as well as parent-paid preschool goes into that bucket of money as well. And then we have other revenue, such things as interest income. We do have some shared services agreement that roll through miscellaneous income, and that makes up less than 0.5% of our revenue that we receive. These are the categories in our budget that we spend our money on. One of the largest, as we all know, would be salaries and benefits for those contractual obligations. We do have out-of-district students based out-of-district for specific IEP decisions. This is not something that's decided on by administration. This is all child-driven in their IEPs. We have professional services, for example, our attorney, our architect, our auditor, those types of things that we have by law. We have utilities to keep the school district running. Repairs and maintenance, these are the types of things that we would put supplies for the bathroom, supplies to clean floors, those types of things will roll through here. We have a cost for transportation, which is transporting the students to and from school on a daily basis, as well as special education would flow through transportation, and supplies. Those would be classroom supplies as well as office supplies, though any types of supplies in order for both in and out of the classroom. What a zero-based budget is we basically start the budgeting process with a clean slate. And we say, okay, what types of things do we absolutely have to have in this budget before we even turn the lights on? Obviously, the biggest numbers are contractual salaries. Those are reviewed each year based on, we start with our student enrollment, determine what we need in the classrooms, and start, obviously, with the salaries and the benefits that go along with those salaries. Those, once you determine the amount of personnel you need and where you need them to be, those salaries are determined based on a negotiated contract that's fixed for 3 years. And the benefits also are fixed for 3 years. That doesn't necessarily mean the dollar amount of the benefits, but that means that the type of benefit we have to offer is negotiated. Mandated special education spending. Again, this isn't something that we make a decision on as an administrative or as a Board of Education. This is something that is pupil-driven and is mandated by the state of New Jersey. Mandated professional services. That would be our lawyer. We need to have an auditor by law do an outside audit of our financial situation. And we have an architect of record as well. That is not a retainer. What we will use for those numbers, starting with the zero, we will base it on our long-range facility plans and those types of things that we plan to put in place and what professional services we might need to achieve those goals. Essential building maintenance. These are things basically to keep the building running. We need supplies in the bathrooms. We need wax and paper towels and all kinds of things to keep the cleaning up to speed, as well as light bulbs, anything that we need basically on a general maintenance supply level in each of the buildings. And that also includes minor repairs. Things that need to be replaced could be light bulbs need to be replaced or ballasts or those types of things. This doesn't include capital projects. This is basically day-to-day stuff. And this is something that we would budget under $2,500 within our budget. Anything over $2,500 goes through Fund 12, and we can talk about that more specifically when we actually generate a budget and talk specifically about what's in those line items. Transportation, this is also a big piece of our budget. We transport over 1,600 students on a daily basis to and from school. And there are all varying times of the day. We do have our bus schedule tiered so that we are turning over buses. We're not contracting buses at each level. We'll use a bus. We'll do a run from one of the younger schools, and then they come around and they do a middle school run also. In addition to that, we're using the same buses to do the midday runs for the kindergarten or preschool students as well. So that's also a very large piece of our budget, but that's also something that we can competitively bid and we can work to control a little bit. We have mandated insurance based on the employee population. We're mandated for workers' comp insurance, those types of things. We're also obligated for property and casualty insurance. For example, the issue we have with the barn is something that's covered by our property and casualty insurance. Slip and fall type of insurances we have to carry by law. And fixed equipment costs, these are things, again, that we budget that will run through Fund 12 based on the cost of the equipment. They could be a phone system, they could be a security system, they could be computers. Anything like that would be fixed equipment costs that we would actually budget in the budget starting at zero. That's not something you build on each year. That's something you say, okay, this is our plan. State mandated testing, that's our all of the testing that we need to do for New Jersey ASK. All of those costs and scoring and all of those types of things actually have to be budgeted in the budget specifically by student. At the end of the day, once we determine what all of those costs are and what we plan on doing, once we put our whole plan together, what this slide is doing, it's representative of the actual Clinton Township school budget for 12-13. I'm not going to speak specifically about the individual line items. This is just an overview of approximately how much of our budget is fixed cost. What fixed cost means to us is that it's not something that's flexible. It's something that we have determined, and obviously the biggest ones would be salaries and benefits. Those are specific to classroom needs, as well as the mandated things that we absolutely have to have in here. So when you and that's 89.9% of our budget. So when you look at a school budget and you zero base, that's great. However, some things you don't get to make a decision on. So it gets a little bit more difficult when you start to get into the 10.1%. What flows through the 10.1% are your supplies, the classroom supplies, your textbooks, things that the state says, well, you can kind of do without if you can't fund it. through the fixed costs. So that's some of our challenge in preparing the budget, is determining, okay, what are our initiatives, what do we really need to do, and what are our plans for the future? And not just one year, we're going to look at this in several years to say, okay, what can we implement this year, what can we put in for the following year, and what is our plan? These are the examples of the variable costs. Sorry, I spoke a little bit ahead of time. So including in the variable cost, the 10.1% are textbooks. We were successful this year, actually, in buying a series of math textbooks, as well as some other things we were able to put in place that were budgeted for last year. So what we'll start to look at is possibly replacing series or implementing new series. That's all stuff that's decided at the curriculum level and flows through. Teacher training and professional development, that's going to rely a lot on what we decide to do, maybe with technology, or maybe with, I know we have a mandated program we're working on in terms of evaluation systems. That all involves a lot of professional development, a lot of training. That is all part of variable costs. That's not something, that's got to come out of the 10.1%. General supplies for departments, your pens, your pencils, your paper, those types of things will flow through here. Unexpected state mandates, and this is where the cost for actually implementing the evaluation system. This year is a perfect example. I know we put, just to start the program without all of the training was $16,000 just to put it in place. So that wasn't something that was budgeted for. It was unexpected. It was state mandated, and it's something that we had to do, and we had to find it in the 10.1%. Other possible improvements to programs, instructions, or facilities. We have issues with, say, for example, a parking lot or a sidewalk or those types of things. If we have the money, this will come out of this line item as a variable cost. But again, this is something we can plan for. It's not something that has to be emergent. This is the goal, is to plan for it, have it in the budget, and then just get the projects done little by little. Other possible programs would be something as core curriculum content standards are starting to, and I probably said that wrong, common core curriculum standards. CCCC, whatever. We're able to adjust and put into the budget the things that we need to be able to achieve those goals with the students. How do we build a zero-based budget? A lot of it I touched on generally, but what I would do in my position as the business administrator is look at trends year over year. What does it look like the cost of the electric is, for example? That's not something that's specific, but it's something that we should be able to trend. And also, it's something that we should be able to improve upon with different initiatives in the building. So those are the types of things we look at. We have committees of the board in each area of facilities, curriculum, policy, those types of things. And coming out of those committees will be things that are discussed with the principals in terms of what they might want to do in their own buildings, which would be curriculum needs. Again, we have to address the state mandates. Textbooks review cycle, if it's greater or older than 10 years, I think you're supposed to replace it. Maybe a new textbook, maybe an updated textbook. Those types of things will all need to be determined when we do the budget. Again, we start at zero. Professional development we discussed, building and equipment we discussed. So all of those types of things that I discussed previously will now all be pulled together and put together in a budget format. Then what we need to do is we need to determine what our revenues are. We talked a lot about our expenses. Now we need to determine what our revenues are. The first thing that we're going to look at before we look at any taxes is we're going to say, okay, what is the state going to provide us for this year? Typically, over the last 7 or 8 years, we've either been flat or we've had a reduction. The last 2 years is the first year that we've been able to actually show some sort of an increase in state aid, but it's not proportionate to the budget. It's proportionate to the state aid. So when you look at a state aid number that's 27% of your budget, and they're only increasing at 2%, that's not 2% of your budget, it's 2% of your state aid. So there's a lot of confusion in that. Then what we'll do is we'll look at the surplus. Surplus is, and I'll talk more about this a little bit later, but basically it's your net profit, if you will, or loss. So it's your increased revenues over your expenditures from prior periods, and that seems to roll. That's a retained earnings number. So what we can do is we can look to see what our surplus numbers are, where we are in relation to what the state would like us to have in our surplus numbers, and then determine how we want to handle that surplus for future years, because you always have to plan ahead. And we'll talk more about that in detail. We get federal aid. Again, that's based on trend analysis and what we projected can be in the future. Federal aid is your IDEA grant, your NCLB grant, those types of things. They typically, traditionally, over the last several years, have been decreasing, not increasing. By law, we are mandated to budget 75% of the prior year. The good news about the federal aid is if you don't get it, you don't spend it. So you budget exactly what you plan on expending, and that's at 75% of the prior year level. Tuition, again, this is out of district. Oh, I'm sorry, we're talking about revenue. This is we will use prior years. One of the biggest pieces of the tuition received number is Lebanon Borough. So we can take a look at their sixth grade population that's going to be coming into seventh grade. We can graduate the eighth graders and take a more reasonable estimate on that, as well as look at what our cost per pupil is to get a pretty firm number on that. And also the other number that rolls through that is preschool, parent-paid preschool. And then the other, again, is our investment income. We do have some shared services agreements that come through here. Also, that what flows through here is our building usage. The biggest piece of that number would be the building usage we have with Work Family for the wraparound program for kindergarten. So that also is budgeted in this number, and it's based on a contractual obligation. After we determine what all of the projected revenue could be other than taxes, you have to take your expenses that we determined originally, back out what we expect to receive from other sources, and the balance is going to be your tax levy. Now, that's a little tricky because we're capped on tax levy. So what we have to do first is determine whether or not what we need after we back out the revenue is determine whether or not that's over the cap, which is 2% of the prior year levy. Again, don't confuse it with 2% of the prior year budget. It's not. It's 2% over the prior year levy. So that's a little bit confusing in terms of everyone automatically assumes that we're going to get a percentage of our $26 million budget, and we do not. The calculation then, actually I just spoke a little bit about the 2% cap. What happens is if we're below the 2% cap, we have a pretty good budget. We have a lot of reviewing to do. We have a lot of documentation to do. We have a lot of conversations to have to make sure we make sure we have everything that we need. But at the same time, we have a decent budget. We're within the state requirements. So really, at that point, we can approve a preliminary budget. We can get it to the county office, and we can do what we need to do. And if that is what we are able to achieve and the initiatives are what we want to do, we could be done at that point after we do the budget hearing and the final vote. Because there is no longer a vote on anything below the 2% cap on tax levy. So basically what happens is if our tax levy then is over the 2%, okay, then what we need to do is we need to, one, look at initiatives, maybe our wish list, and determine what we can live without for the current year and what maybe we can implement in the future. And we would do that I don't like to use the word cuts because really we're starting at zero, there's nothing to cut. However, we might have put some stuff in there that maybe could wait a year or 2 years. Maybe we can hold off on renewing some textbooks for another year. Those are types of things as a board that the committees will decide whether or not that's the best thing for the students. Once we go through that process, it then goes back to the Finance Committee and the Board of Education, and the Superintendent and Business Administrator are all involved in that process. So that's one of our options. The next option that we can do is we can take a look at our surplus. By law, we can have 2% of our budget in surplus, which for us is a little less than $500,000, the $495,000. And again, these numbers are based on the 12-13 audit. So, I'm sorry, the 6-30-12 audit, so the 11-12 audit that was just conducted. So by law, we can have 2% surplus in, we can have 2% of our expenditures in surplus. What that means is that's basically cash in the district. And for a $26 million budget, it's not a ton of money. But the state says it's enough money if you need it on an emergency basis. One of your boilers go and you can't get it up and running. What the state says is you can go ahead and make the expenditure out of your surplus money and apply for the grants or funding later. So basically what would happen is if we didn't have surplus or if we were extremely low, we wouldn't be able to afford a budget, a boiler. So then we're really in a mess. So basically what that is cash. It's revenue that we've exceeded our expenditures in prior years and we're allowed to keep for a rainy day. And that's not to buy textbooks. That's not to, put a roof on a building. That's not to hire staff. That's specifically for an emergency situation and it needs state approval. Okay? They recommend we have 2%. 5 or 6 years ago, if you went below 6% surplus, you had to get special approval from the state. You weren't allowed to go below 6%. So now we're operating at 2%. So it's a big change. It's a big change in the dynamics. I'm hearing those sirens, and they sound awfully close. So it's been a big change. It's been a big change in philosophy, and we're able to get that done. The other option, so we can go below the 2%. It's not recommended by the state. It's a little risky, but we can do it. So we can cover some of the 2% for absolutely necessary things that we determine needs to be in the budget from this fund. The third thing is to actually take the over cap expenditure to the voters in November. And what that means then is there will be a ballot question to exceed the 2% cap by a certain dollar amount, whatever that dollar amount is, on the budget for the voters to approve or not to approve. Do you think the building's on fire? You think we'd know?
The alarm would go off. We're fine.
Yeah. It's probably accidents.
Hopefully it's not the barn. Awfully close. Anyway, so then what would happen is the voters would either approve or disapprove the budget cap. Now, this does not mean you get to vote on the original budget. It's only the excess. A vote is not required up to the 2%. So the only thing that will go to the voters is the excess over 2%. If it's approved, what would happen? Did you have a question?
Do you have to tie the spending measure to the question, or can it be general?
It's a general excess. As if when we did a budget vote, we did a budget vote for the tax levy for the general fund and debt services separate. I'm sorry, not debt services, that was referendum. So just the general fund. And you did, there was a question on the ballot specifically for the amount we needed to raise in tax levy. This will be a similar question with only the amount over the 2% cap. So if we needed to raise, $3 million in tax levy, and we needed $3.5 million, you'll only see the $500,000 on the ballot in November. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Heather, to follow up with that question, so then it's not like the old special question, it's not like the old special question thing where you had to put something on, earmark it, dollars for a specific item.
That is correct. It's an excess budget vote. It's not a special question. It's not a special referendum. Even though you will see us refer to it as an excess or cap override question or cap override referendum, it's specifically for the money above and beyond the 2% in our tax levy. Does that
you
make sense?
You can have a special question for something else, though. For example, if you wanted to build a new school, you could have a special question that would be another referendum question.
Correct.
Oh.
I remember seeing a question
above and beyond.
About the roof of the high school. There was a question.
I'm
Do
sorry?
Do you authorize $1.8 million spending?
There was a
the
question in the for the roof of the high school.
You can have that as a special question, tied to something, yes.
Yes, but that would be above and beyond the 2%. But that in that particular situation, even if you did not exceed your cap, you would still have that question on the November ballot as a capital improvement project.
Because they didn't have the funds in capital.
Correct. Reserve. You have to raise it in tax levy. If they had the money in capital reserves, they can budget to remove it from capital reserves to do the project.
To the operating budget to pay for the project.
Correct. Correct. Okay? These are the steps that we go through, and I will try to put timelines to this as we go through this process. The first thing that happens is information is disseminated to each of the principals in the schools, and what happens with that information, for example, repairs or maintenance or equipment or things that they may need specifically for their schools or for their, things flow down like their copier costs and telephone and those types of things are all budgeted separately. That information is disseminated to each of the principals. And in collaboration with their staff, they provide the superintendent and I with their wish list, if you will. Okay. What we then do is we go through the process we discussed earlier. We pull that information together. We start looking at trends. We determine what we can and cannot do. And then we propose to the Finance Committee a preliminary budget. That's going to happen somewhere in January. We're going to get all these budget work papers back and look at it through December and then start to put a preliminary budget together with the Finance Committee in January. We will continue to have these types of meetings. So what's going to happen is this is the first one basically on how to put the budget together. We're going to have more specific meetings on things that we talk about that we want to put in this year's budget and why and where the money is going to come from and how we plan on funding it and what impact that's going to be to the students as well as the taxpayers. So those meetings are going to start now. We'll probably not have another one until January and continue through the process until we finalize the budget. In February, the first week of February, typically the board will vote to approve a preliminary budget. And what that means is that's a budget that we've put together that's within the cap or not, depending on what it comes out to. And then what we need to do is we have to submit that budget to the county office or the state of New Jersey for approval. And basically what they do, and they have the right to do, is they can go through our budget line item by line item with a red pen and decide what we can and can't do. Do they do that? Sometimes. I haven't experienced it. I'm not sure what it'll be like here, but, you know, that's a collaborative effort between us and the county office. Then once that happens, the county office will come back in some shape or form with a approved preliminary budget. Then what the board will do, and then it's advertised for the public, and we have then... we have a public hearing, and we present it finally, the finalized budget, to the voters in the public hearing at the end of March. And then once that is completed, the board can then vote on a final budget. If the budget is within the 2% cap, it's the final budget for the following year. If it isn't, then we need to talk about those. So this is, if it's within the 2% cap, we have all our ducks in a row, and we're done. We can start living with the next year's budget. And if it isn't, then we go through that process over cap that we discussed earlier about it needs to go before the voters. We first take a look at cutting using surplus and then going to the voters in November. Now, these are some questions that come up in terms of overall frequently asked questions. The first is, can you spend more than you budgeted? So what that means to me and in doing the budget and living with a budget is, I budgeted $26 million. Is it possible for me to spend $27 million? The answer is yes. And the reason is because if we were able to generate additional revenues in the current year, we can appropriate and spend it in the current year. Doesn't mean we will, but that's how sometimes when you see the original budget compared to the revised budget, it could be different. It could be more. The biggest piece of this, which is mostly confusing, that happens quite often, is the extraordinary aid calculation. And what that is, extraordinary aid is basically a reimbursement from the previous year's budget for special education costs above certain thresholds. So if that's the situation, what happens is we get that information late in the year. We cannot appropriated into our budget, even though we've already spent it. So the state says, okay, you can spend it next year. It's outside the surplus calculation. So let's talk, and that, in essence, will increase the next year's budget. What is extraordinary aid? This is a common question because not too many years ago, it was a very small number. The state didn't fund the formula. We were getting very small numbers for large expenditure. So really, it wasn't material for people to notice. And I don't mean notice by hiding it, I mean notice that it was a big increase in the current budget. The reason it has become a larger issue in school districts in New Jersey is because the state is now funding the formula, or some larger percentage of the formula. So what that means to the school district is we are going to have our extraordinary, our special education costs, whatever they are, based on a student's needs. That's mandated by the state of New Jersey, it's not an administrative decision. What extraordinary aid does is it says, okay, for any expenditure for an individual student over $40,000 that you keep in district, we will reimburse you 95% of your cost. Now, it's been trending a little lower, but it's a lot more than the 1 or 2% we were getting before. So what does that mean? It means that if we have a student that we have in district that has a large amount of related services or is in special programs within the district that have, for example, if we have a student that has to have a one-on-one aide or a one-on-one teacher, the cost, all of the costs associated with that student's education, over $40,000, the state will reimburse us. If the student is sent out of district, they will reimburse us 75% over $55,000. Excluding, that's only for tuition, okay? If it is a student that we have in another public school, for example, we don't have a program for them here, but for example, Morris Union Jointure is considered another public school, we will be reimbursed 85% over $40,000 of all costs. So what does this mean? This means that we're getting a substantial amount back from the state of New Jersey, but it's also tricky. Because if you are careless and over budget this line, and you don't get the funding, you have a problem in your current year budget. That's very difficult to recover from. So what's happened over the last several years is people have been very hesitant, when I say people, I mean business administrators, to budget a large amount of money here. Because what happens is if you don't get the funding, then you gotta go to your superintendent and your board and you have to say, I over budgeted extraordinary aid, we have to cut $500,000 out of the budget. It's very difficult to do. And because the state was not reliable in the amount that they were funding, what we ended up doing is under budgeting a little bit. But now we have a trend. The state of New Jersey has been funding extraordinary aid, not exactly at these levels. I think last year the 40,000, the in-district reimbursement was like at 87% instead of 95%. The year before I think I got 4%. So we're seeing a trend. So what's happening is you're gonna start to see the extraordinary aid budget in revenue go up, which in theory reduces the tax levy. More revenue, less tax levy. But what happens is, say for example, I budget, and this is what happened last year, we under budgeted extraordinary aid by $215,000. So what does that mean? And it wasn't intentional. It's based again on your population and what your actual expenditures are. You don't know the year before what your actual expenditures are gonna be. So what that means now is I have $215,000 that's currently in the budget from the prior year that I can take out of revenue and appropriate to expenditures and spend it where we need it. It more times than not is probably for a special ed student that we didn't budget for. Makes sense. So that's a situation, for example, that you're gonna see the current year budget and the actual budget where the actual is more than what you originally budgeted. So that goes to both questions. Do we accelerate spending at the end of the year? If not, what do you do with any leftover monies? We talked about surplus. We talked about what we can do with surplus. We don't accelerate spending, but we have to remember we're working with a budget. If we knew what it was gonna be when we did the budget in February, we would have a need for a budget. It's a budget, and some things happen, some things don't. We get state mandates, things that maybe we planned on doing we couldn't do because we didn't have the funding for it. So what we do is we evaluate our spending on a regular basis so that in February or March, you shouldn't be going, uh-oh, I've got money that is gonna throw everything out of kilter. We should be evaluating over time what our initiatives and our programs are gonna be so that we aren't spending it. And we shouldn't be, and we won't be. What happens if we do have leftover money? And we're gonna talk to this more. There are several things we can do with it. We can let it roll through surplus. Anything over the 2%, we can put into a reserve account, which I will speak more specifically about on the next slide. Or we can go to tax relief in the previous year. And that's been a combination thereof actually trending over the last several years in the Clinton Township budget that we've done a combination of both. What is surplus? Excess surplus and reserves. We talked a little bit about surplus. It's basically your net income. What it is your excess revenues over your expenditure. It's in business, your revenues, less your expenditures. What happens in a school district is we don't get to keep a profit or a loss. What we have to do, it's called fund accounting. Everything zeroes out at the end of the year. Revenues and expenditures are always equal. So what happens is it rolls in, what surplus is your revenue excess over your expenditures. What excess surplus is the amount of surplus that was generated in the current year over 2%. state says you can keep 2%, that $495,000. The excess surplus we have to make a decision on. And usually we do it in combination of several things, because you have to be careful in how you plan for the future. One thing we can do is we can put it in a reserve account. What that means is we could put it aside for a project that might be coming up. For example, if we project that we need to put a new roof on another school, and that should be in our long-range facility plan, we're going to want to build enough money in the long-range facility plan so that we can pay for that without having to raise taxes in the future. So that's one of the things. The other reserve we have is a maintenance reserve. If we plan on parking lots that need to be approved, or there's an emergency reserve. Currently, we have money in an emergency reserve, and we have money in capital reserve. But it's not where it needs to be based on our long-range facility plan, which is something that is a constantly moving document. And then the last thing we can do with it, which you try to do evenly throughout time, is you help to support or reduce your tax levy, or at least keep it flat so that there aren't huge spikes and valleys in your tax levy over time. You want it to kind of be flat. Yeah, we'll give it back and we'll work on making sure we're all on the same page, but you don't want to all of a sudden have a huge spike in tax levy and then all of a sudden have a huge amount back, because you want to kind of keep it flat. And then what we use the surplus for is the things we talked about, the emergencies, those types of things. If a boiler it goes bad. And those are types of things that you need state approval to pull to spend that money. Another question that we currently get is, what is the district planning on cutting from this year's budget? Well, we don't really plan any cuts. And the reason we don't plan any cuts is because we're starting with a clean slate. If you build a zero-based budget, you don't need cuts. Okay? So basically what that means is we're just going to start with our enrollment. We're going to determine what the staffing is for that enrollment and what programs and initiatives we plan on doing in the school, in the classrooms, and then we build from there. The only time we would begin looking at cuts is at the end of the day, after we pull everybody's information together and our tax levy is above the 2%, we might need to look at things that we can postpone to future years. Where does the district see savings? There are several things that we will look for as a board that will hopefully generate savings over the current year budget. And those types of things will be things that we can go out in a competitive bidding process. We can take a look at some of our current expenditures, look at things that look like possibly with the change in the economy or with the change in some programs, we might be able to get a better service for less money. So those are the types of things we're already starting to look at before we even start to build the budget, because that's just planning for the future. That's being responsible with the money. Our budget calendar we talked about briefly when I went through our 8 steps of building the budget. The first presentation is starting here tonight to talk about the types of things we look at and what we're going to put in the budget. Then all that information comes back to Dr. Clark and I, and we'll start looking at that information along with the leadership team and plan programming. In January, we will present that information to the Finance Committee and take information as well from the other committees in terms of what the curriculum initiatives might be, or facilities in terms of the long-range facility plan and the things we need to do in the school buildings. And then in January and February, we'll start to present that information as well. We'll wait for our state funding information. Typically, that information comes out at the end of February. When the governor does his state address, and then we can kind of finalize the budget at that point. We don't know exactly what we're going to need to raise in revenue until we know what our state aid funding is going to be. The first week of March, the budget is due in the county office. The preliminary budget is due in the county office, and usually at the end of March it's by law, it's the last week of March that you do your public hearing. And then we also, once all of that information is done and compiled, we do plan on meeting with the town council and the mayor to discuss the types of exciting things we're able to do here and where our money is being spent. So our next meeting is our regular board meeting on December 17th. On January 3rd, we're going to be doing a reorg meeting. And all of the meetings are going to be here in this room at 7:30. And we're going to keep talking about the budget. It doesn't stop here. It's only just beginning. So keep an eye on the website for updated information as we begin to go forward. And any questions or concerns or information that you are interested in as we go through this process, Dr. Clark has put her email address for you to reach out to her. This PowerPoint presentation will be posted on the website tomorrow. So overall, this is basically how we put the budget together. Any questions?
I have one quick question on your second to last slide where you list the budget calendar. If I heard correctly before, you not only send it to the county, but then you also said to the state. Does the county send it to the state, or do you send it to the state?
The preliminary budget, the county office is the state approval.
Okay.
It's the same. County office, the county superintendent. The only way it would go to the state is if we're unable to reconcile on a tentative budget.
Okay, thank you.
And we work really hard that doesn't happen, right. So we make sure we all understand. Any other questions? Would you just mind? I can't hear so well. Would you mind speaking to the microphone? Thank you. I'm sorry.
I just had a question. I think it was the third or fourth slide.
Maybe I could figure out how to go back here, Jason. I don't know.
Maybe it's the fourth or fifth. There we go.
The pie chart?
Yeah, one of the pie charts.
This one?
Yes, this one. Are we considering school choice in tuition or state aid? Or I'm not sure where it would be.
It's coming through state aid.
Okay.
That is an increase in our state aid. School choice is a separate line item in our revenue on our budget statement. You can see it on the user-friendly budget that's posted on the website from last year and will be posted again this year. But it does flow through our state aid number. Okay. Tuition is only for tuition paid from other, either districts or parents, specifically a revenue generator.
Okay. And there was my other question. You said the 2% levy is on the levy.
Correct.
So we can know that number beforehand, like how much over?
Yes. Actually, we can go back, and the tax levy, I'm sorry, I don't have it detailed here. I think that is the levy. I apologize. I can get you that information. I just don't have the, yes. On the user-friendly budget, there is a line for tax levy. I think it's the $22 million number.
Okay.
Increase that number by 2%, and that's the maximum we can increase our tax levy.
Okay.
So it is that simple.
Okay. Because I know a lot of people have been confused with the 2%.
And it is. It's very confusing because the impression is it's 2% of the total budget.
Yeah.
It's 2% of that line, which is 85% of our budget. Or 83%, 84% of our budget. It is a large piece of our budget. However, it's not the whole budget. So that when we're putting a budget together, you might have health benefits, for example, January 1st go up 16%. Well, in order to stay within my 2% cap, obviously I need to be able to have my expenditures low enough to cover that.
And in the surplus, I was a little confused on the surplus and the others are, which is one, I know the surplus you said was ones that the state has to approve. That's more of an emergency management type
thing. If we were to spend that money.
Yeah,
correct.
If we were to spend that.
That is correct. What happens is the state allows us to have 2%. It's under S-1701, which is a law that was put in place in 2004. And what that means is that we're only allowed to keep 2% of our expenditure budget or $250,000, whichever's more. So we have 2% at about $495,000. Any revenue or any excess surplus, any surplus over that $495,000 is considered excess. And we go through the process with the audit. And if you look, do you see the piggy bank and the $650,000? How
Yes.
do I get the slide back up, Jason? Just double click it. Oh, you can see what I'm doing?
Yes.
Careful.
Actually, if you just hit down to the play button.
Yeah. See, I'm a PC person. I'm so sorry. Mine looks a little different. Okay. So you see the piggy bank of the $650,000?
Yes.
That's money from prior year surplus above the 2% that we're giving back, if you will, that we're budgeting, that was budgeted for in the 12-13 budget to reduce the tax levy.
Okay.
So what's included in that number as well is a few years ago, I believe it was 9-10, the state of New Jersey came back in July and said, mm-hmm. we're going to give you more state aid. Mm-hmm. Well, at that point, everybody's budget's been struck. You know, what are we going to do now? So you had three options. One was you could do a revised budget to the county. two was, and either appropriate it with their approval. You could, if you didn't do that, what it did is it rolled to excess surplus in the next year. But you had one more year to allocate it. So it could have been appropriated, it could have been allocated in 11-12. If it was not allocated and spent in 11-12, it rolled to excess surplus in 12-13, which is the budget we're living with now, and it's part of the $650,000. I believe it was $247,000. Okay. So that's part of the 650 that reduced the tax levy. So had we not had that surplus number, the tax levy could have been $650,000 higher. So that's basically what it means.
So like the excess surplus, let's just say, like, account, that was one you don't need state approval to use on what you want it to use. I'm just trying to figure out which different one is which.
Well, the surplus is 2%.
That was that one, but what,
and
the excess
surplus.
And if
we need to use that, we need state approval. Mm-hmm. That would be for an emergency situation. That's basically cash. Think about it as a checking mm-hmm. account. That's cash that we have in our district. In case there's an emergency, we can take care of it. Okay? The 2% above cap, the excess surplus, needs to be dealt with in that audit year.
Okay.
So when the auditor comes in and does our audit in July or August, they're going to do an excess surplus calculation, and they're going to say, this is how much it is. Now, I know that number before they come, and we try to plan for that number. And you plan for it in the future. With that money, we might say, okay, look, we just put a $500,000 roof on at Spruce Run School, and our capital reserve account is down to $100,000. We might say, we'd like to replenish some of that fund for a roof that might go on in another building or another project. So that is what we did, I believe, in June. We put $400,000 back into capital reserve. So that, again, reduced the surplus a little.
And then you put it in a folder that can only be used for those types of
items. Correct.
Okay.
That needs special approval to be
yes.
be used.
Okay.
Correct. So that's how the reserves count as well.
Okay. And what was that third one that you had? Reserve. Oh, so that's the reserve.
That's the reserve.
Reserves.
Okay. Yep. And then the third one is tax. Well, it's tax relief, reserve, mm-hmm. are basically the two yeah. okay. that we can do with that.
I think that was it.
Make sense?
Yes.
Any other questions?
The salaries, we negotiate the contracts and then we know what the increases will be for the 3 years, but unless staffing levels go down, we should be expecting salary costs to go up.
Correct.
Every year under contract.
Correct. What we have in 3 years is
Kevin,
salary
can you talk into the microphone? Because I know I can't hear you,
sorry.
So maybe somebody at home might not be able to hear you either.
Thank you, Mrs. McLaughlin. What I was saying was, on contracted salaries, we negotiate the contract, so we know what the increases will be for 3 years. The salaries aren't fixed. We just know what the increases are. So unless we reduce staff by, say, lower enrollment, you don't need as many staff, we should expect to see our salary costs go up if staffing levels are constant.
Potentially, that is correct. The only other situation that wouldn't be correct is if you have breakage. What I mean by that is you have a retirement, for example, at a higher place on the guide, and that person is replaced with somebody with less experience or maybe at a different place on the guide. So that's what we call breakage. And in that particular situation, you might see salary decrease in certain areas.
Do we
like in a position?
Correct. It might be what you'll see when we do our budget is you're going to see that information by school. And you will be able to see a flux year over year in terms of what those changes are.
And the breakage is a anticipated but not a definite cost because
that
you don't
correct.
Know,
that is
correct.
Until we have retirement papers in our hand and we actually have a,
it's just
have
an
a
estimate.
Replacement. Yes. We may have a vacant position, for example. The state requires us to budget a vacant position on step one of the guide. So that's what we do. If we have an expected vacancy, we budget it at step one. We budget it one step one on the guide. You know, the chances of hiring at someone at step one of the guide, I don't know. If you have to have somebody with, for example, a speech therapist, you're not going to hire them with a BA on step one. That's all stuff that goes in this process. The other thing that has to be taken into consideration is, for example, medical leave. We may have a medical leave for maternity or for some other situation where they're out long term, and we have to continue to pay them as well as their replacement. So these are all things that go in the calculation, and we try to anticipate that as closely as we can.
And then with extraordinary aid, you mentioned that there's more of a track record of funding.
Correct.
At the formula, the published formula.
Correct.
I was just thinking, though, if this would be a good year to project the formula being fully funded because of...
I don't think the fund... I apologize to be so aggressive, but I don't think the funded formula will ever be fully funded. What it is, or what it has been over the last several years, is it's funded a lot more than it was 4 years ago. Substantially, exponentially. So it's become more of a comfort level to budget a little bit more, but you have to be careful because it's specific on your current year costs. So when you do your budget in March, it could be very different than the cost that you incur for the current budget year.
So what is the track record? Was it that long ago that they budgeted at that small percentage?
No, it hasn't been.
Those two budget
years.
When did
they I think it was 2009 that they changed the funding formula, and they've mandated more of a funding for special education costs.
Okay.
And then it was a very slow process because they always said that they were going to fund the other formula. They're not funding that 2009 funding formula at the levels that they promised, but they are funding the special education piece at a higher level than they ever were before.
I think Mr. Sturgis brings up a really important point in this. When we were talking about the school choice monies, and some of the board members asked questions about the reliability of that money in terms of the state government and concerns about their finances, it may not occur that you'll lose the state choice money. However, this is an area that it would not surprise me terribly if they went back to the old formula because they were short funds. Hurricane Sandy has had a major impact on the state, and it would not surprise me if they cut funding in some other places. To Heather's point, we have to be very careful.
Thanks, I'm good.
Okay, thank you.
The required spending that you listed here, I just want to be clear, it's not fixed spending. There's a variable component to this. It's just things that you have to have in your budget.
In the 89%?
Yeah.
Fixed? Is that the number you're looking at?
No, just overall.
The fixed costs? I'm sorry.
When you list the required spending, where you have required spending.
This slide?
This one.
The one before that.
One more?
This one? That one? No.
The explanation for this, it's more fixed than it isn't fixed. It's the salaries and the benefits. There's very little decision making to be here in this spending number, in the 89%. These are the mandated expenditures.
I think I know what Mrs. Grant might be getting at, though. It's fixed, or it's required. However, there are things in it that are negotiable. So, for example, the salaries, this is a negotiation year, all right? It's unlikely that salaries will go down. However, it's variable in terms of what that amount would be, all right? So that could change, and it could change. You could choose not to have, for example, you could go with a one-year contract or a two-year contract. It could be 3 years. It depends on what the board negotiates and how you move that around. So. And for example, transportation, all right? It's a required expense. However, there's variability in terms of what you're negotiating in terms of competitive bidding. So you may be able to get some of those numbers down from what they are now, but you have to have a number for that topic area.
Right, but that number can fluctuate in either direction based on things that may be out of our control.
Yes, correct. For example, benefits All right. They could have, I believe it was 1 year, the state health benefits plan increased by 25% dramatically, and districts were not prepared for a 25% increase when I think at that time, if I'm not mistaken, that was the time of the 4% budget caps.
Yeah, the same year.
So they are known to fluctuate. Those benefits can go up and down.
Thank you. But these are the areas, too, as an administration, we work really hard, and not necessarily cap salaries or benefits. We don't have as much control over that because of the length of contracts. But things like transportation, mm-hmm. we have some control over that. We can strategically plan our routes. We can tier our routes. We can competitively bid our routes. It all involves a lot of work, which is really what we need to be doing. Mm-hmm. So yes, we can control some of these costs as best we can by competitive bidding, by competitive quoting. The building repairs and maintenance, again, that's coming out of committee on a long-term process, so we can determine what we have room for in the current year budget and what's important. And you know, you're going to look at your safety issues first. You're going to look at projects. So those types of things we can maybe postpone. So there is some flexibility, but this is stuff that you're going to incur a large amount of these expenses just by opening the doors in the morning.
Right.
So that's the purpose of explaining this. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Freda?
Did you have a question?
Well, regarding the fixed costs, isn't ideally, I mean, if we can reduce the fixed costs, we open up more for variable costs, which is textbooks, professional development.
Absolutely.
So you know, they're fixed, but, you know, to be a little more tighten the belt on certain things in order to open up for variable, which is classroom education, is really
absolutely
a good goal.
Or, you know, it not only opens up more for variable costs, but it also helps with your tax relief. It's going to help with what you need support for, and that's doing our due diligence and being responsible. So your it is correct what you are saying. But also keep in mind that there are some things here that really we can't make a day-to-day decision on.
Oh, no, I understand. Like Dr. Clark said, transportation. You know, some things
we can work really hard on and see what we can
right.
do. Absolutely.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And I just wanted to say, you know, if you have something like benefits that goes up 16%, say, all right, because that's the number that's being thrown around, you have a 2% cap, all right, you have to make up that difference, all right? So you're going to negotiate really hard to be trying to make up that difference in your budget just to stay even.
Well, I mean, I would think with just those two line items, the negotiated salary increases and the variable benefits cost, that's got to be a significant amount of money annually that's going to go up. It's not going to go down. Your salary and your benefits costs aren't going to go down, so unless your headcount is reduced, you have to be negotiating or trying to negotiate better rates on other services, or you're going to have to cut somewhere or increase the levy.
Right, and you may have some decreases in your headcount, all right? You may not be replacing everyone who retires, all right? You may need to do a reduction in force. We're looking at all those numbers right now, what our enrollment projections are. But you're not going to reduce it by 20 teachers. It will be a small number for next year and probably the year after. You'll lose a couple of teachers, but...
Or alternatively, you bring in additional revenue sources to maintain status quo, like school choice.
That's
yes,
exactly correct.
Exactly.
If you can't decrease your expenditures, you need to increase your revenues. It's a very mm-hmm. simple formula.
Right. That's that whole balancing
correct.
Act on the second slide.
Okay. That's correct. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Going on with the agenda, we can now have the second recognition of the public. The public can come and address the board on any matter that they would like. Any takers?
Letta Brennan, 21 Fond Drive.
I know we talked about previously the solar panels, and I know there was talk about there was something going through with new measures and stuff, but even if we just got them and it just offset our own costs, would that not be cost saving alone just there? And because I, from what I understood, it was like no cost to us, they put it in, and or is that only linked if you sell it back?
Do you mind? I'm sorry.
Thank you, George.
The programs that were run within the state of New Jersey, they were only made possible through state subsidies. It was basically by the state requiring utilities to buy solar renewable energy credits. They call them SREC credits. And without that market of credits that they force the utilities to buy, the financing of the systems doesn't work. Okay. Like to just go out and buy the solar panels and put them up and earn revenue by achieving solar power from the sun, not paying a utility bill, the math doesn't work unless you have that SREC credit.
Okay.
And the market collapsed last spring. Mm-hmm. It hit a high of like $611 per credit in November of 2011. But then by April, May of 2012, that was under $100. Mm-hmm. And right now, we're not very far north of that. The state has not yet put through regulation that would substantially increase the requirement for the credits to force the value up. So right now, municipalities, school districts are kind of in a holding pattern waiting for some of the demand to increase because there was a glut of capacity in the state. So it will still be a good project, and we have plans, literally we have plans for a system and an RFP that we could put out, but the market's not there right now. It's not to our advantage to put it out with a $100 SREC credit. We wouldn't get a good deal, or maybe not even a bidder. So we're waiting until the state legislature or the division of the state that regulates utilities to make some changes to beef up the credits.
Yeah, I remember you guys said something about something was coming possibly down the pipe about that, but I guess.
So, yeah, and you can, I look occasionally, and the school boards, they put out some announcements about it, and our architect as well will keep an eye on it. But
it's something we essentially have if, say, it comes all of a sudden.
If it comes, we would
just
do it
go, hey,
as soon as it makes sense, yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Hey, anything else? Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, I'll move to adjourn.
So moved.
So moved.
Second.
Second. Kevin?
Yes.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Bye.
Aye.
Thank you.